Welcome back, everyone, to the Deep Dive. Today, we're going to be talking about something that, honestly, can feel a little bit like a punch to the gut sometimes.
Yeah.
Feedback.
Oh, yeah.
Even when it's well-intentioned, even when you know the person has your best interest at heart, just getting that little bit of criticism, it can be so tough to process sometimes.
It really can. And that's why we are here today to do a deep dive into what makes feedback truly effective for learning, for growth, for, you know, improving in our personal and professional lives. So we really want to unpack the science behind it.
Yeah. And, you know, just to kind of set the stage for our listeners, we've been looking at a lot of different sources that explore both like the kind of the theory and the practice of feedback, like giving it, receiving it. And our mission is to really pull out those key ideas and turn this into a conversation, right?
Right.
We're not just going to lecture you
yeah.
about feedback, but actually have a dynamic discussion about it.
Absolutely. Because we know you, our listener, you want to learn quickly, thoroughly, and we want to respect your time. So we're going to cut to the chase.
Right to the chase. Okay. So let's get started. Why is feedback so hard to take sometimes? It feels bad.
Well, it does. And what's interesting is that feedback, particularly if it's perceived as negative, it can trigger this really strong emotional and cognitive response in us. Mm. In fact, research suggests it actually activates both the reward and threat systems in our brains. So even feedback that is well-intentioned, it can be subconsciously interpreted as a threat. Mm-hmm. And that's something that is really key for you to keep in mind when you're giving feedback. If you can frame it around growth and collaboration, focusing on, okay, what can be improved? What did we learn? Rather than focusing on the negative, it can help minimize that threat response in the person receiving the feedback.
That's super interesting because it feels personal.
Right.
Even when it's not meant to be. It feels like a personal attack.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine that the way we each individually respond to feedback probably is different depending on who we are.
Oh, absolutely. Individual characteristics play a huge role in how we process feedback. You know, things like self-esteem, your overall mindset. Do you believe that you can develop your abilities or do you see them as fixed?
Yeah.
And crucially, how you interpret the motives of the person giving the feedback. Do you trust them? Do you believe they actually want to help you? All of these factors really come into play.
So it sounds like, and you know, we all know this probably from experience, that feedback that is not delivered well can actually cause some harm.
Yes.
What are some of the ways that feedback can go wrong?
Yeah, there's quite a few. You know, feedback that's vague, overly negative, doesn't provide any specifics, you know, or feels like a personal attack.
Yeah.
That kind of criticism, particularly when it doesn't offer any direction for improvement or concrete steps forward, it often leads to people feeling less motivated, disengaged from their work, and ultimately it can actually impact performance negatively.
Can you give us an example? Like, what would that look like in action?
Sure. Imagine if a supervisor just said to their employee, your presentation wasn't good.
Yeah.
That's it. That's vague. It's negative.
And not helpful.
It's not helpful at all. And it doesn't give the employee any insight into why it wasn't good or how they could improve for the next time. They just feel criticized. And the research really underscores this point. One meta-analysis we looked at showed that a whopping 38% of feedback interventions actually decreased performance.
Wow, that's a lot.
It's a lot. And often this is because the receiver felt like their sense of self-worth was under attack. So it's not just about, you know, feeling a little bit down, but it has a tangible negative effect on how people perform. And this is because of what happens in our brains when we get this negative feedback.
Yeah. Can you explain like what's going on neurologically?
So negative feedback activates the brain's threat response system.
Right.
This triggers the release of cortisol, the stress hormone. When your stress level is elevated, your cognitive functions are actually impaired.
Oh, that makes sense.
So it becomes harder to think clearly and to actually learn from the feedback, even if there is something valuable in there. It's almost like your brain prioritizes self-protection over processing that input.
So it puts up a wall.
Exactly. And psychologically, there are also some consequences.
Yeah.
You know, harsh or unclear criticism can fuel anxiety and over time can contribute to feelings of depression and low self-esteem.
Yeah.
Think about students who receive an assignment back that's just covered in red ink with very little constructive guidance. They tend to fixate on their perceived failures instead of understanding the underlying concepts and how to improve in the future. So for you, think about your own learning experiences. Has it happened to you?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I bet it happens to our listeners as well. One of the things that our sources mentioned that I thought was really interesting was making a distinction between personal criticism and just observing someone's behavior.
Yeah.
So can you kind of talk about the difference between those two?
Yes, that is a critical distinction for effective communication. Saying something like, "You are a disorganized person," is a personal attack. It's targeting their character, their inherent traits. On the other hand, saying something like, "This report was submitted late and lacked a clear structure," that's an observation about a specific behavior
Right.
and its outcome. This is much more constructive because it focuses on something that can be changed and improved.
Yeah.
Personal criticism erodes trust and makes people feel judged,
Yeah.
whereas behavioral observation keeps the focus on the actions and the consequences.
And so when trust breaks down, that has an impact on teams, right?
Oh, absolutely. So harsh criticism damages interpersonal dynamics. It leads to less open collaboration and communication.
Sure.
People become more defensive, resistant to suggestions, and it undermines psychological safety. That crucial feeling that you can express ideas and take risks without fear of negative repercussions.
Right. So for our listeners, think about your team interactions. How is feedback being framed, and is that impacting the level of trust and openness? And
Exactly.
what happens when we give feedback about something that somebody might think is just like, well, that's just the way I am, you know? You're just not a creative thinker.
That kind of feedback, which attributes a lack of skill to some fixed trait, reinforces what's known as a fixed mindset. It implies that someone's abilities are unchangeable, which is incredibly demotivating
Yeah.
and can actually prevent them from even attempting to develop that skill. So for you, it really highlights the power of language in shaping someone's belief in their own potential for growth.
So I think we've talked a lot about what not to do. So
Yes.
let's turn it around. What does effective feedback look like? What makes it work? What makes it something that we can actually learn and grow from?
Okay, so the good news is there's a science to getting feedback right. It really revolves around clarity, empathy, and providing actionable guidance. It's about focusing on those observable behaviors or outcomes
Right.
rather than making judgments about someone's character.
Yeah.
And as we mentioned, it's absolutely crucial to avoid personal attacks.
One of the things that our sources highlighted was a specific model for delivering effective feedback, and that's the SBI model. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, the Situation Behavior Impact Model provides a really practical framework.
Okay.
It guides you to first describe the situation in which the behavior occurred, then the behavior you observed, and finally the impact that behavior had. So instead of saying, "You are a terrible team player,"
Right.
you would say, using the SBI model, "During yesterday's team meeting," that's the situation, "you interrupted colleagues several times before they could finish their thoughts," that's the behavior,
Right.
"which made some team members hesitant to share their ideas later in the meeting," that's the impact. So for you, the beauty of this model is that it keeps the focus on objective observations and their consequences.
Yeah, it's so much clearer and it's not accusatory. And then it gives a person something really concrete to work with, right?
Exactly.
What about the level of detail we should be aiming for when we give feedback?
So specificity is really key. Vague feedback, like, "This report needs improvement,"
Oh,
is
yeah.
likely to just leave the recipient feeling confused and unsure of what to do. Compare that to saying something like, "The introduction to your report could be strengthened by more clearly stating the main research question
Right.
and its relevance."
Right. That's much more specific.
The second statement is much more helpful.
Yeah.
It pinpoints a specific area for improvement
Yeah.
and even suggests a direction.
I also thought it was really interesting what our sources said about the tools that we use to give feedback, even like track changes in documents.
Oh, yes. Even well-intentioned tools can have negative consequences if we're not mindful. If you're making corrections and track changes without explaining why you're making those changes,
Yeah.
it can feel like you're just imposing your way of doing things and silencing the author's voice.
Right.
They might accept the revisions without really understanding the reasoning, and the opportunity for learning is lost. And similarly, brief margin notes might not have the necessary context.
Right.
So for you, consider how the way you provide feedback through these tools might be impacting its effectiveness.
That makes a lot of sense. What about this idea of the feedback sandwich? Is that actually helpful?
So the feedback sandwich, which is starting with a positive, then the constructive criticism, then ending with another positive, is a common technique intended to soften the blow.
Yeah.
While it can improve initial receptiveness, some argue that it dilutes the impact of the constructive feedback.
Okay.
Or can even come across as insincere if it's not done well. So the takeaway for you is that the sincerity and clarity of the feedback itself is probably more important than the specific method of delivery.
it sounds like the framing is so crucial, right? And that we should really be emphasizing growth and development.
Exactly. Reinforcing a growth mindset is so important.
Mm-hmm.
Emphasize that skills can be developed. Instead of focusing on perceived failures, you can use phrases like, here's an opportunity to build on this.
Right.
Or let's explore some different strategies. This reframes feedback as a pathway for development.
Rather than a judgment. So for you, it highlights how powerful your language can be in shaping someone's perspective.
Our sources actually helpfully broke down feedback into three levels. Can you walk us through those?
Yes. This can be really insightful for both giving and receiving feedback.
Okay.
So first, we have task-level feedback, which is focused on correcting errors or improving actions related to a task.
Okay.
For example, the data in your chart is accurate, but the labels need to be clearer.
Got it.
Second, process-level feedback looks at the strategies or approaches someone's using. For instance, you might say, before you write, try creating an outline.
Right.
Finally, we have self-regulation feedback, which encourages people to think about their own learning. So you might ask, how might you approach this differently next time? For you, understanding these levels allows you to tailor your feedback.
That's super helpful. What about the timing of feedback? Is it better to give it immediately after something happens, or should we wait?
Immediate feedback can be great because it's closely tied to the situation, making it easier to recall. But avoid overwhelming someone with constant critique.
Yeah.
It can make them feel micromanaged and hinder their ability to process the feedback. So find a balance. Provide feedback in a timely manner.
Right.
But also give them space. So for you, consider the individual and the complexity of the feedback when deciding on timing.
There was a really interesting connection to self-determination theory. Can you just talk about that?
Yes. Self-determination theory emphasizes our need for autonomy, competence, and relatedness.
Yeah.
So when you frame feedback in a way that supports someone's sense of choice, it fosters ownership.
Right.
For example, what are your thoughts on trying X instead of just dictating a solution?
Right.
Similarly, acknowledge their effort and progress to support competence.
Yeah.
And deliver feedback with empathy to foster relatedness. For you, aligning your approach with these needs can enhance effectiveness.
So it's not just about pointing out areas for improvement, but also about acknowledging the effort.
Absolutely. Pairing constructive feedback with genuine affirmations of effort or progress is vital.
Yeah.
For sustaining motivation, it shows you recognize their work and encourages them to keep going.
And it sounds like it's really helpful to invite the recipient to think through it with you.
Absolutely.
And to even come up with solutions.
Yes.
So you're making it a team effort.
Exactly. Asking things like, how do you perceive this challenge, promotes a collaborative dynamic.
Yeah.
So when we get this right, when feedback is thoughtful and delivered effectively, what are the benefits?
Yeah, what do we get out of this?
The benefits are huge, both for the individual and for teams. Thoughtful feedback fuels skill acquisition and personal growth. The data suggests that individuals who receive specific task-level feedback can achieve up to a 30% improvement.
That's massive.
Compared to general praise or criticism. That's huge for learning and development.
What about the impact in the workplace?
In the workplace, employees who view feedback as a tool for development show about 12% higher productivity.
Yeah.
And when it focuses on effort and strategies, it cultivates persistence and adaptability.
Right.
So it's really about how we perceive feedback. Yeah.
That influences its effectiveness.
So when it feels fair and constructive,
exactly,
then it's much more likely to be useful.
When individuals perceive it as fair, constructive, and supportive, they're much more likely to act on it. And supportive feedback is also crucial for building resilience and self-efficacy, that belief in your own ability. One study found that students who received growth-oriented comments on their essays not only revised them more effectively, but were also more likely to persist with future challenging tasks.
Oh, that's interesting. And so it seems like it also strengthens relationships within teams as well.
Absolutely. Mm. Framing feedback as a collaborative effort, saying things like, let's work through this together, builds trust.
Yeah.
Teams with high psychological safety report significantly higher engagement, something like 76% more.
Wow.
And a culture of constructive feedback leads to greater job satisfaction and innovation, as we saw in Google's Project Aristotle.
Okay, so let's wrap up with some takeaways. If our listeners want to get better at giving feedback, what are the absolute best practices they should remember? All right, let's distill those key points. First, allocate enough time.
Don't rush it.
Don't rush it. If you're short on time, it's better to wait.
Okay.
Second, be specific and objective.
Okay.
Include clear, actionable steps. Instead of do better next time, say your analysis was strong, but including more data points would make it even more compelling.
Much better.
Third, balance positive and constructive feedback.
Yeah.
An optimal balance might be 3 positives for every constructive point, and explain the why and the impact.
Okay.
Fourth, deliver your feedback in a supportive manner. Your tone, your body language, these matter. Be collaborative, ask for their thoughts, and listen to their responses.
I'll make it a two-way conversation.
Exactly.
Okay, and the last key takeaway.
Encourage a growth mindset. Use language that focuses on learning and improvement. Instead of, you're just not good at this, say, you haven't mastered it yet, but with practice you will.
It's all about the framing, isn't it?
It really is.
And we also talked about how culture plays a role.
Yes, cultural differences can influence how feedback is given and received.
Yes.
So for instance, direct criticism may be fine in the Netherlands, but not in Japan.
Right.
Tailoring your delivery to both the individual and their background is essential. So for you, being aware of these cultural nuances is key.
So to sum it all up for you, our listener, feedback is this really powerful tool, but it requires skill and understanding to deliver it well. It's a social contract, not an opportunity to be superior.
Exactly. When feedback is done poorly, it breeds fear, it stifles growth, creates resistance, and can cause distress.
Right.
But when we get it right, with clarity, empathy, and focus on development, it becomes a catalyst for learning, performance, and relationships.
So to leave you with something to think about, we've talked about the science of feedback, but what about your own cultural background and the backgrounds of those you interact with?
Yeah.
How might these subtle differences affect how you give and receive feedback?
Yeah, what adjustments can you make to ensure your feedback is heard and acted upon?
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the science of feedback.